Hey guys, it's Danny from Hodinkee. This is a special presentation of Hodinkee Radio. I'm taking over for James Stacey today. And just wanted to give you all a heads up. There is some strong adult language in today's episode, so it might not be for everyone. But it's nothing too crazy, so I hope you enjoy. And yeah, here's this episode. Hey, it's me, Danny. And this is an episode of Hodinkee Radio. Today I am joined by Nora Taylor, our deputy editor here at Hodinkee, Bryn Wallner, a.k.a. Dimepiece, and the SVP of content himself, Mr. Nick Marino. There's a reason that all of us are sitting around a table here on day four of Watches and Wonders. We're actually back at the hotel where we're all staying here in Geneva, a little bit down the road from the PAL Expo where the convention's being held. And each of us, this is our first watch trade show. So we are trade show newbies. And so we're sort of sharing in the newness of that and just sitting down to have a conversation of things we observed, what we expected, did it meet our expectations, you know, everything. So thanks for sitting around with me and letting me take the mic from James for once.
Pleasure to be here, Danny.
Yeah. But let's just like kick things off. I'm not going to go first because I was just at a frantic pace the whole time, but maybe Nick, as sort of the overseer of the Hodinkee editorial operation and the entire plan that you put together that we hopefully executed on, was this everything you expected and more?
Yeah, I keep a pretty close eye on our performance. And the first day of Watches and Wonders, we set a company record for the most traffic in a single day ever, which I think is testament to a couple things. It's testament to the amazing work that all of you guys did and always do. But it's also a testament to just the surge in interest in watches. A huge percentage of that audience were new to the site. They didn't come last year, which not only means that we're growing, but it means the watches are growing. I guess I didn't fully know coming in who was going to join us, but it's a lot of new people. I think that's a really healthy sign for the industry.
Do you think that is a testament to the growth of watches? Do you think people like the idea of examining a trade show from afar, living vicariously through us? I mean, what is that? What is it?
I can almost guarantee there's not pent-up trade show fascination out there. I mean, we brought Bryn in because she's sort of a friend of Hodinkee and writes for us whenever we can get her to. But I think like the success of Dimepiece, and Bryn, you can even speak to this, has really tracked and maybe even sparked growth in watches. Like what the work is that Bryn is doing is really hand in hand with what we're doing to try to welcome more people into this community. So I would be curious to hear from your perspective what it was like and what your audience was saying. But I don't think it's pent up trade show demand. I think it's we and our peers in the space are doing a pretty good job of getting people interested and they're coming along.
I think that's a really good point. And Bryn, maybe you can take it from here. I mean, I don't have the exact date of when Dimepiece started or when you sort of kicked that off. This has to be the first time that you are really a player in the industry, and mm-hmm. you're at a basically the entire watch world has convened in Geneva. And let's get super macro on this thing. I mean, what was it like being at your first trade show?
Well, I mean, I'm shocked they even invited me. I feel like a petit poisson in a big ocean. But for me personally, when I entered the the security, where they have this really dystopian voice. When you do your access card, it's like, access granted. It's actually kind of scary. But then I walked in and I saw how massive it was. I mean, words cannot describe how big it is. And I got full body chills. And I just had such a visceral reaction to it because it really felt like kind of all of my work and all of this just dedication to watches, it all is here where you can actually touch and feel.
They call it that. They really do call every session a touch and feel session.
That's super unfortunate.
It's very like ESL. I think they need to rebrand if the FHH is listening. It's a little creepy. No, but it's un honneur to be here. And as far as my audience goes, I mean, like you said, nobody's clamoring to hear about the trade show. I mean, just by definition, like trade show, it sounds so industry, but there's just been so much hype around watches. And it's, I feel like the lifestyle element, which you guys have been doing an amazing job of, where it's not just wrist shots, it's not just, you know, movement, it's also lifestyle, it's fashion, it's music, it's everything. And I think it's just something exciting for people to be interested in that's new, because fashion feels like, you know, you've been into whatever for so long. Watches is something that's, I think, brand new for a lot of people. And it's exciting to see what the brands drop, especially a big name like Rolex or something where it's kind of accessible for people to.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because most of what we see from Dimepiece is the cultural sort of moment that watches are having on a broader scale. But now this is you interacting with new watches that are dropping immediately. And are you changing the way you are? How does that affect how Dimepiece is and the branding of Dimepiece? So you're just switching to like breaking news. Now here's each watch. I mean, what has changed for you?
Well, I mean, I really just follow my gut. So if I'm in a room and I'm genuinely excited by something, then I'm going to take a wrist shot and post it. And I try to give my little spin on it. Like, I don't know. Everybody was talking about this Rolex GMT, the left-handed one. And everybody was trying to, you know, do their take on the nickname. And I was like, it's Buttercup from the Powerpuff Girls. Where it's like the fact that I have an opportunity to just kind of make it mine and that a lot of it resonates with a lot of people is exciting. And yeah.
Nora, what was the brand that made the biggest impression on you?
Ooh, Cartier.
Ooh.
We just had so much fun in that room. I talked about it on the pod 2 episodes ago. I just had a really fun time there. And then Van Cleef & Arpels, I think, which I went to the next day. We just had a really great session. And
Peak session.
Just kooky and delightful and informative and not something I was expecting to be wowed by, but walked away sort of with a new perspective on the brand and an excitement about some of the watches that I would not have felt if I hadn't seen them in person.
Yeah, I mean, that's one that I think a lot of sort of hardcore traditional watch people, the sort of folks who like, you know, Rolex, Tudor, Patek, often overlook, which for that, you know, maybe a big portion of our audience. Can you bring all of us up to speed on what they're doing that's so interesting and striking to you?
Just hearing the story behind the watches and how they approach making them, where it is like story, concept, idea, look first, and then the actual like mechanics second, where it's sort of this deep, I don't know, almost romance in the way that they think about watchmaking and the way that they think about time. There's this watch that they just came out with where they've totally revolutionized how you are supposed to look at time and use the watch to see the time, where the minutes are on the side of the case and then the dial is just all of these flowers. And for every hour, a flower opens up. So you know that it's 1 p.m. because one flower is has bloomed. And but when it's 2, it's not just that like one stays open and another one joins it. That one closes and then 2 more open in a different pattern. And there are 3 different cycles of how these flowers bloom on your watch. And it looks beautiful. It is just like such a slow and thoughtful way to tell the time. And then you have to think about, holy shit, how did they, like, what is going on inside of this watch to make all of this happen? And I am, like, not a flower and butterfly gal, but it is, I walked away with a kind of giddiness and thirst to learn more about the watch and kind of the history of Van Cleef, which is not a brand that I know that much about generally.
I think if you were listening to yesterday's episode, we talked a lot about that watch, but I think one that caught your eye was maybe not a new release, but the Midnight Kiss.
Ah, the Midnight Kiss.
Très memorable.
Yeah. Now with more kissing.
Wow.
Yeah. Unlimited smooch.
It was unlimited kissing was said to us several times.
And what I really want to know about the research and development is that they had a discussion about the perfect length of a kiss and they landed on 3 minutes.
Oh, no.
For one kiss.
Is that a lot or a little?
That seems like a long kiss.
It's the perfect amount.
Yeah.
It's the exact perfect amount.
3 minutes? Yeah. I thought you were going to say 3 seconds.
To kiss in public. Maybe we're just American prudes, I think is why.
I think so.
But yeah, I did not expect to come to a trade show and have the word kissing, private kiss said to me so much.
Yeah, I mean, I've now been at Hodinkee for over 2 years and it's kind of wild that I've never been to a trade show, but this is also my first trade show. And I think that I've heard enough stories from colleagues like James, Jack, Cole, that I felt like I've been to one of these before, even though I've never been to one of these before. So when I walked in, it didn't shock me. Like it didn't shock my system the way that I thought it would, because I'd seen photos and heard stories and I almost pretended like I had, not even like actively. I just almost felt like I was like, oh yeah, there's a massive Rolex booth next to a massive Tudor booth across from an even more massive Patek booth that looked like nicer than any house I've ever been inside of. And they're three stories tall and they're inside of a convention hall. And, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, you've been to maybe an auto show in your life, but you've never been to a watch show. And these are really different, even though the objects are markedly smaller. And Nick, I'm interested in what you're, I mean, you had to have a similar reaction. I mean, what was it like for you stepping into the hall for the first time?
Yeah, the word booth
right.
sort of barely covers what you're looking at here. It's what they're called, but it's, I mean, it's the size of a mansion tucked inside a facility the size of an airplane hangar. The scale of it is amazing. And then these things are carpeted, you know, they're staffed by people in uniforms. You know, the lighting is on 11. You know, it is the production values are unbelievably high, which I guess when I had heard, you know, I'll be stopping by the such and such booth. I mean, I was expecting like a kid's lemonade stand, you know, and it couldn't be further from that.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, that was the part that even though I had an image of what it looked like from the exterior in any of these things, each one was more impressive than the next. You literally enter into, I'll use Rolex as an example, like a hall. Like an interior hall where you just wait to be escorted into some other interior space within an interior space up another flight of stairs. And I'll start with Bryn. I mean, there are some weird or interesting or kind of wacky presentations. What was sort of the most wild that you encountered, if there even is one?
I think my new favorite brand is Roger Dubuis.
Okay.
I'm obsessed with them. They are... Well, I went to their keynote today, which felt very, I mean, this all feels like we're living in the future, kind of, but also being very old school at the same time.
And talking about mechanical objects, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
right.
It's the tension between the futurism and the sort of pervasive nostalgia for the past is really wild.
Yeah.
You can feel that everywhere.
Totally. That was very poetic. Have you guys been to the keynotes? They're kind of, I mean, it's just like... these guys, and they're really excited and they're, you know, they're kind of spewing their marketing language. But the Roger Dubuis, they were really basing their whole ethos on four words, which is excess, madness, pleasure. And there was something else, freedom. And I was just like, whoa. And the fact that they led with excess, I thought was really... They're just owning it because it is so excessive. This whole thing is excessive. Like, it's surreal.
I really appreciate someone owning it because
right?
there is this kind of like, it's a terrific value at only $12,000.
Yeah.
You know, or in the case of Roger Dubuis, much more.
Yeah.
So for someone to,
at minimum,
to acknowledge it and even kind of revel in it.
Absolutely.
It's just like refreshingly honest to start with.
I was happy to hear that because it, we're just coming out of the pandemic, and he even acknowledged there's a war raging next door, but here we're living for today, and you know we have the privilege to kind of enjoy these insane items, and they just go ham like they're knights of the round table. And it's just like, I feel like, you know, I'm wearing a Cartier right now, it could not be farther from a Roger Dubuis, but just like the ethos and the attitude. And they had a professional skydiver who was on the panel, and they showed just like a video of him flying through the air like a flying squirrel. He had this like these sleeves, and it was branded Roger Dubuis. I was like, this is so lit. Like, I love this brand.
And their booth, they had a watchmaker kind of in the wall in the way where I walked by, and I was like, that must be a really hip DJ. Like, it was sort of like,
it's totally that.
Is that like, Calvin Harris? And I was like, no, it's someone who makes watches. I guess this is a bit of a tangent, but my dad is a union stagehand. And part of being a stagehand, shout out to IATSE, is building conventions like this. So he would often be like, I have like an 18-hour day where I go to the McCormick Center and I build out this like booth. And so the entire time I was just sort of like, the manpower that it must take to like ship all of this in and build it to the quality that they did, like that is just absolutely bonkers to me. Like the people that we saw, the booths that we saw, the planning, and then just this sort of like the physical like build out and then tear down that's going to happen. The temporary, how like feeling that it was temporary Knowing that it was temporary, well, it still felt so like strangely permanent. Although I did like lean on a wall in Piaget and was like, I don't think this is a real wall.
This is giving a bit.
Yeah.
This wall gives.
How embarrassing would it be to flop into just like a tray of diamonds?
There's some interesting, unexpected moments. We touched on this in yesterday's pod, but James, John Buse, and myself went into Chopard, which from the exterior and even the interior, it's very reserved, very old fashioned, very classic. And before we walked in to see the watches, they handed us noise-canceling headphones and pushed us into a pitch-black room with a three-dimensional curved television screen where an insane presentation began where all of our senses were just out of whack. And we were watching a watch get built and we were turning around the room with each other with noise-canceling headphones on. It was pretty crazy. And that's the kind of stuff where like I would never have expected that to happen. I was like, oh, we're going to go see watches. Oh.
Yeah.
I can't see.
Suddenly you're in Epcot Center.
Yeah. Exactly. And for example, Tudor had arcade games in their booth, which was a little bit interesting. You wouldn't really expect something like that. But I want to move the conversation a little bit to the watches, because one thing that I found was over the last 2 years, sure, it's not like we've been writing without seeing watches. I mean, that's an absolute misnomer. We get watches sent to us when they're released and we can touch and feel them to our heart's content. But there was something about being in one place with all these new watches and having instant reactions and having instant context and being able to really get a bird's eye view of the industry at the moment and comparing what each brand is doing and how it feels different from what they did before, as opposed to things sort of happening piecemeal throughout the year. I don't know, Nick, like as sort of the one who is literally in charge of content, I mean, that was the most content we could probably produce at one time. I mean, did it affect you were in as many meetings as I was? Did it affect how you sort of were contextualizing the industry?
Yeah, definitely. And Cole touched on this a little bit in his GMT hands-on piece. He sort of led with this idea that the watch enthusiasts, particularly online, tend to rush to snap judgments based on a photo that, you know, might be a rendering or partly rendered or certainly photoshopped, and actually the experience of let's say touching and feeling the watch itself in person can be quite different. And it's better if you can to kind of reserve judgment for a minute. Now, the truth is not everyone has the luxury of being able to have the new Rolex Destro GMT on their wrist on day one. That's true, but his point still stands. These things really do look different in person. My favorite watch of the show is a 31 millimeter Tudor. I would have never gotten that from a press photo. And to be able to see them side by side, like I would take the 31 over the 36 every day of the week. But the only reason I know that is because I got to try them on.
That's interesting you say that, because to me, it is we get to see things, audience, before you do. It's just the nature of the beast. And then we're sort of delivering information. And so we get them free of the noise. And so to Nick's point, who knows if he would have felt differently about would he announce to the room that his favorite watch was a 31 millimeter Tudor. Nick doesn't care about that kind of stuff, but I might. But I agreed with him in the moment. I was like completely untainted by any exterior opinions that have already entered the realm. I think it's interesting. Our follow-up coverage sometimes gets in sort of the zeitgeist of things, but all that initial stuff, watches we love, you know, I've been on the record saying that the Air King was a watch that really excited me, even though a lot of people vehemently disagree with me. I stand by it. I think that's really cool that we're sort of there at the front. And that's why sitting with you guys here, like this was our first time getting to really do that. I don't know if you guys, Bryn or Nora, agree with that.
Yeah. Strong agree. It was something about just kind of like having all of these watches at your disposal and like putting them on your wrist. Cause I don't know, being still relatively new and seeing them over the year that I've been here, like you get one every couple of weeks and it's like, ooh, it's just so nice to like actually touch them. And then here you kind of like the excitement of just like
feeling
being
them.
Around a watch has dissipated and you can be a little bit more discerning.
Well, if I may, there was a moment in the Cartier session where Nora tried on the new Black Dial Tank Louis Cartier, and the whole room just kind of stopped and looked at it on her, because it looked like it was made for her. It looks like she was born wearing this watch. There's absolutely no way that experience could have been replicated through some kind of publicity photo. It's only in the moment that you see actually kind of who you are as a watch person, what your tastes really are, what you want to buy, what you don't want to buy, what's overhyped. Mm-hmm. That was a really special moment. I think for you as a relative newcomer, my read and watching your reaction and everyone's reaction to that was, this is what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah. And nothing will make you get ready to be financially reckless more than a room full of watch people being impressed with you wearing a watch.
Absolutely. You need that.
Yeah.
Be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think, I feel like when I see online the press photos of their very specialty, like one of one, métier d'art, like the hand painted, there's always
the crash with the,
crash, even the crash, which it's no secret I'm obsessed with the crash, but I see those online and what you were saying, how they kind of look, sometimes it's like a mock-up or a Photoshop. It almost like it's too high res on the online and you see it and you're just like, I don't know. I can't even picture it on my wrist because it almost feels like a cartoon or something. Yeah. And then you see them in person and not only do you get to see them, but you have some person with a French accent telling you about the artisans that have spent, you know, 800 hours or whatever working on this one watch. And it's just so incredible. And sometimes, you know, I do get lost in the sauce of the culture and to be reminded that there are artisans and there are people with, you know, these little teeny tiny instruments and they're working so hard and there are only so few people who can do this in the world and they're in some Swiss Valley. It's just like, so it really brings you down to earth and you can really appreciate the craftsmanship and you just, it hits different in person.
Mm-hmm. I agree. We had a moment in the Chopard booth where we saw an Alpine Eagle Tourbillon.
Mm-hmm.
And if I saw that in a press photo, I would say, okay, that's the same watch with a Tourbillon. It doesn't excite me. In the room, looking at it, the watch A is thinner and it wears amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it just hits you that there's something about this that was, and it's probably 20 times more expensive than the steel version. But you, in there, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense, you know? But if I was at my computer, you know, at home, I'd be like, come on, like I'll spring for the normal steel version. But I think you're right. I mean, I think it helps. I would normally tell myself, you know, pinch yourself and realize this is ridiculous. But there is something about this industry that pays attention to these little details.
Mm-hmm.
And these little details cost a lot to produce. And the price is just a result of what goes into them. And there is a world for those watches as much as there's a world for the more affordable value propositions, you know, brands that aren't even, you know, exhibiting here, the Seikos of the world, but even like the Orises of the world, which are not inexpensive. But they're the more fun side of watches, in my opinion. And also, shout out to them, one of the coolest booths at the show. But no, as being our first show, I mean, we're always going to remember a watch, the watch of the show for our first show. I mean, was there any watch that stood out for each of you, sort of being the one that will stick in your mind, that sort of was a highlight?
To me, it's the Tudor Black Bay 31 S&G. What a surprise.
Yep.
And such a pleasant one. I would totally wear that watch.
And not just from a design perspective, I think they put a new movement in it too. And Tudor's really not just going to push that watch from a marketing standpoint, but it really represents something of, we talk about this on Hodinkee a lot about inclusivity and watches not being for men or women specifically. But I mean, you don't normally see a 31 millimeter watch get given that sort of attention. And that's important, I think, industry-wide.
Yeah, I think sometimes people maybe misread our whole unisex campaign as some kind of like gender politics crusade. I mean, it's partly about inclusivity for sure. It's also partly about everyone being able to wear what makes them look and feel good and not having anything pre-prescribed and just sort of being honest about your body type and your skin tone and all that stuff. I mean, look, the industry has a ways to go in terms of inclusivity, that we know, but I also think just personal expression could use a modernization in this industry. And I'm here to tell you, the 36 does not look good on me and the 31 does. That's it.
Can't argue that. What about you, Bryn?
Well, I think the biggest learning thing for me has been, I mean, I know what I like. You know, I know what I wear. I know I like a tiny Cartier, a tiny, you know, I'm all about the teeny tinies. But this was a chance for me to really immerse myself in like the big extra watches that I don't know if I would necessarily wear them, but I'm so blown away by the, you know, the technique and the mechanic. I'm still trying to grasp all the vocabulary, which I'll fully admit. But I was so impressed by Ulysses Nardin. They had these three watches. One of them is named the Freak, which I love. There was one where the guy just went so in depth about it, and it tells you the exact phase of the moon and exactly where the sun is and the tide and not only that, but, you know, like 24 different cities. And there was just so much information. And I felt like I was in like an astronomy class. And I'm just, I have a newfound respect for the watches that I don't jive with aesthetically, but that I'm like, I fuck with the technology and the vision and the passion that goes into it, because it's not an everyday thing.
For me, this is actually probably the first time I got down with like Chronomaster. I have always been like too busy, too sporty. Like, I don't want to time anything in seconds. And then went to Zenith and tried on both the Chronomaster Open and the Chronomaster Sport and just had a blast. They were not too busy, which is even with like the tricolor subdials. Like, it was, I saw it, I think, for what it was for the first time and how it could wear on the wrist and how all of that information and all of those pushers and all of that could look really balanced and not look overly sporty in the way that I thought it would look on my wrist. So that was kind of the first time I was like, okay, I get this. I could see how someone might be into these.
For you, was it the Air King, Danny?
It's the Air King personally. If I'm going to remember one, it's probably going to be the year of the left side crown GMT, but it'll also be the first time that I put a platinum Daytona on my wrist, you know, like there, and that's a crazy thing. You know, it's not something that many people will ever get to do. I'm never going to own a platinum Daytona, but I can say that I wore one, and one that is really a feat for Rolex in a lot of ways. I mean, a fluted platinum bezel is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And to get to see that up front, I don't know that I ever would. I don't think that's a watch that would have been passed around, you know, to the press very easily.
You also, when you're touching and feeling these watches, you realize how important the metal actually is. One trend that we've noticed this year, Jack pointed this out, is that there's a lot of platinum. And then Logan pointed out there's a lot of titanium. So you got both ends of the spectrum, the super heavy duty and the extra light and industrial. I think that's really fascinating.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I just, before we started recording this pod, was visiting Acrivia today, and I held a platinum watch and a titanium watch, one in each hand. And it couldn't be a more insane experience. But I wanted to zoom out a little bit from the Pal Expo, because this is also, I don't know if it's all of our first times in Geneva, but I think it's our first time being in Geneva where the entire world of horology is in Geneva. And you can, for me, to see where all of these watches sort of reside, all the brands reside, where this industry is like the industry of the city. Every building around the water has the different watch brands advertising on top of the building. I mean, it's, you feel it the moment you get off the plane, the whole way into the city, walking around. We visited the Mad Gallery on our first day, you know, MB&F. I just mentioned I went to see Acrivia and what they're doing over there. What was Geneva like for you guys?
I had some surprisingly good tacos.
What?
Was not expecting that. I had tacos one night and Ethiopian the other night. I'm sort of determined to not succumb to, like, you know, beef Wellington and foie gras and fondue for, you know, $700 a plate kind of a deal. Like, just,
yeah,
like get me to the Persian place. and I was just happy to see that that's a thing. But having said that, like, it's been snowing. The Swissness of it is pretty charming, and you have to be kind of a curmudgeon to not feel that.
Luckily I arrived when it was super sunny and gorgeous, and I got to walk all around and seeing the skyline with all the watch brands. I'm like, this is a dream come true.
It really is, yeah.
Like, I was being so, I felt like I was at Disney World, and I had fondue twice in a row, much to my dismay. So much fromage.
The most fromage.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, but I'm enjoying leaning into it.
Yeah, Geneva's mad cute. Like, I didn't expect it to be as cute as it is. Like, I was sort of like, oh, it'll be, because everyone talks about how expensive it is and it's this luxury industry capital. And like, I expected it to feel maybe a little more sterile, but it feels very lively. Between the Pal Expo and the hotel, you kind of walk through a student area and past the UN. So you just kind of see everybody hanging out, doing their thing. The architecture is really great. I think we were like, how great would it be to live on this like cobblestone street where there's just a fountain and then a tiny cannon and a...
And these streets make you whisper for no reason.
Yeah.
Because they're that quiet. Yeah. You just feel like, yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
A New Yorker I shall not name told me one day during this trade show that he's thinking about moving here.
Wow. That would be a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also funny being here, meeting all the people that I know from Instagram, all the watch,
yes,
people.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got Andrea Castellano for the I Am Casa on Instagram. Like all the watch influencers from around the world. Austin Chu from Horror Loop.
Oh, yeah. Austin.
All these people, I'm like, hey, I feel like I'm on a college campus almost in the trade show. Everybody's like, what's up? How was last night? Like,
so were you spotted on the trade show floor a bunch of times?
I was spotted.
People yelling dime piece at
yeah,
you?
Yeah, dime piece. And I was like, hey. Yeah, it was really fun.
You even hosted an event, right? You were not just an observer, but a participant in the trade show.
Oh, yeah. I came a little bit early. I moderated a discussion panel for Breitling for their relaunch of the Navitimer. So I was on the stage with Georges Kern and Gregory Breitling, the son of Willy Breitling, who created the Navitimer and also like an aviation pioneer and a creative director. And yeah, it was cool to be here kind of early to settle in, but do something that felt very professional that I was nervous about. And then I got to just enjoy it and see people. It's really fun.
I'm interested in what watches you all brought on the trip, because again, like I talk about this all the time in my stories that people may or may not read, who knows? No, but that watches really are like keepers of memories, and this being our first time doing this, I think we're never going to forget it. And we're going to remember that when we look at the watches we wear. I personally brought two pieces with me. I brought my Rolex GMT Master, the quote unquote Batman, and also my Tudor Black Bay 58. Sort of a nice little combo. I was really thoughtful about bringing those watches. And I'm curious what you guys had on wrists.
I deliberately wanted to wear something from a brand who was not represented here so as not to show any favoritism to the folks who were.
That's very Swiss of you.
Yeah.
You're more thoughtful than I.
So I brought a Zodiac complete calendar, vintage from, I think, the 1960s or 70s. It was a gift from my girlfriend when I got the job at Hodinkee. She wanted to give me a watch that would sort of commemorate that moment and that I would always sort of look back on, not just as a emblem of this new job, but also sort of her support of it, which I think is really beautiful. So it's a cool, small.
Yeah, what size
is that? It's very cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, I think it's maybe 34. So it's triple calendar with a moon face. The month currently says it's February, so we got to work on that. But otherwise, running pretty well.
We'll get there.
Spiritually,
it feels
it's February.
Like February. Yeah. I mean,
your watch tells the spiritual month.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day.
What movement would be the spiritual month? I'm wearing my Cartier Tank Foncé, my first watch. I have a Cartier. I haven't seen the Cartiers yet, so you know I had to rep
get
it.
Get ready.
I also brought my teeny tiny two-tone Datejust.
Two-tone club.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Also, this is a Hodinkee exclusive.
Where's the air horn? Air horn.
I got a new Rolex.
Hey!
Oh. I'm rich. No, just kidding. My dad gave it to me. It's the watch that he wore in the 90s that he never wore when I was like old enough to know. He would wear like a Garmin or something, very outdoorsy. But he gave me his Datejust that's from 1986. It's like a blue dial, Buckley, Roman numerals.
Yes.
And I was like, should I bring that? And I was like, hell no.
The white Roman numerals on the blue dial?
It's a gold Roman numeral.
Ooh.
It's really nice and it's engraved with his initials.
That's great.
But I did not bring that because I'm terrified of bringing an heirloom anywhere.
I did bring an heirloom, not like a fancy one, but I brought the watch that my mom got here in Geneva in 1969, just because it's my favorite. It's small. Felt kind of fun to bring it back here under wildly different circumstances. And Brenda and I were texting about how hard it was to pack for this.
Oh my God.
Because we're like, we don't know what the vibe is.
Yeah.
Like,
what's vibe check?
Mm-hmm. But
be yourself, I think, is the lesson.
Yeah. And you can wear sneakers.
You should, because
you should wear
you're walking
sneakers.
Like many kilometres.
Yeah. But yeah, this is what I wore. And it is, you know, just kind of a stretchy, cheap bracelet. So very easy to slip on and off. Because not only did I try on new watches, I tried on a bunch of other people's watches, which was great. That was also a fun thing to just be like, what are you wearing? Let me try it on.
I think as we sort of wrap things up here, as we look to the future versions of ourselves at our second trade show, you know, what did we learn? How are we going to prepare better? You know, because I agree, like some of these like wardrobe choices, choice of footwear. You don't think about that really, but I'm wondering, you know, I can start with you, Nora, go back the other way around the table, which no one knows what the table looks like because podcasts are not a visual medium. But, you know, what are you telling future Nora for trade show, the sequel?
Bring a gigantic water bottle. don't lose your black dial tank Louis Cartier,
because it'll be on my
wrist next year.
Manifest. Mm-hmm. I want to finesse my way into some of the dinners because I'm like a small fry, and I'm realizing I have been humble throughout this, and I think it's like, how do I get to a really fancy Rolex dinner, or how do I get on Paddock's distribution list? Because I didn't get invited to that. So just, you know, working my angles and trying to reach a more global audience.
I'm not sure this is the exact right phrasing, but I'd like to try to work a little less. Because, you know, I was running the site. So, you know, editing story after story after story. And there were a couple of moments where I know I was missing having some fun just because I was trying, you know, my focus is on the end product, which is what the website looks like. And I'm super proud of the stories and the podcasts and the photographs that we put out there. But I would just love, even if it's one night, to just take one night off next year.
Also next week, yeah.
If you test positive for COVID.
Yeah. It could very well be next week. And rather than wolfing down tacos by myself to get back to the hotel room to edit, you know, just take a beat and get out and enjoy it. Because as sometimes our commenters will rightly remind us, it is an immense privilege to be here. And while it is totally work, I think next year I'll remind myself to look around and enjoy it just a little bit more.
Listen, first of all, I want to give a shout out to James Stacy for letting me sort of moderate this panel.
Woohoo!
And thanks to all of you for giving me the chance to talk and share in all of our first time experiences. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please share it with a friend. If you have anything to say to us, please, you know, hit the comments section. The show will be back on its normal sort of schedule and cadence next week. So you'll have the one and only James Stacy back with you. So, but yeah, thanks again, everybody.
Thanks for having us.